Hey, this is Zac Efron, and you're listening to The Stupid Cancer Show.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the hosts of the Stupid Cancer Show, Annie Goodman and Matthew Zachary.
Woohoo!
Not that there's anything wrong with him.
It's because he has a lot of chip stuff.
All right.
Monday, February 18th, and welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adult cancer. My name is Matthew Zachary. I'm a 17-year young adult survivor of pediatric brain cancer.
And my name is Annie Goodman, journalist and young adult breast cancer survivor, and we're your hosts for the Stupid Cancer Show.
It is not okay that 72,000 young adults are diagnosed with cancer each and every year. So, got cancer? Under 40? Sucks, huh? Time to get busy living, folks, because the Stupid Cancer Show is changing the world, one chemo infusion at a time.
Join us tonight as we profile C4YW, the Conference for Young Women Affected by Cancer, produced by Living Beyond Breast Cancer and Young Survival Coalition. Stacey Lewis with YSC and Elise Kaplan with Living Beyond Breast Cancer will be our guests. Also, Jeff Tomchak, founder of C2B Scene, is in the Survivor Spotlight.
The Stupid Cancer Show is a production of Stupid Cancer, a nonprofit organization that empowers young adults affected by cancer, online at stupidcancer.org.
And a Stupid Cancer welcome to any and all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network and on iTunes as we come to you live from the ChemoDeck, our fabulous studio in downtown New York City. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
We seem to have some audio issues.
Yes, it's all good, though.
I don't know what. Sounds better now. I don't know what happened.
It seemed to be redlining in the intro.
We did switch computers over the weekend.
We did.
Yes.
You went from the old school tower.
A Mac tower from like 2005.
To the MacBook Pro.
From 2010.
The pre-retina.
Super pre-retina.
Okay. But post... whatever that old thing was that you had when I first met
you. Like the plastic white clamshell.
Yes.
iBook.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
So how are you?
Hi, Keddy.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy post-Valentine's Day. Hello, Annie.
Hi, Matthew.
Maddie Beckett.
Hey, everyone.
In the house. Your mic's off. It's okay. We don't want to hear from you.
It's on now.
Hey, everyone.
There you go. All right, good. Good. Okay.
So what's going on, Matthew?
Happy Valentine's Day. I understand you have a girlfriend.
Well, she's in attendance this evening.
That's right.
From the couch.
Where is she? I missed her. Couldn't see her. She's behind the shoji screen.
Yes.
Lauren McCann, everybody.
Hello.
And Lauren gets her own applause. Lauren is the fabulous daughter of the fabulous Sharon Franz, who is the founder of the National Coalition of Oncology Nurse Navigators, and which is one of our amazing national partner organizations. So, Annie, how was your Valentine's Day?
I worked till 10 o'clock at night, so it was awesome.
That's the best kind of Valentine's Day you could possibly have.
Especially when you are boyfriendless.
Yes. Well, there was a post I put up on Facebook today, which I meant to put up last week, called Dear Valentine's Day from a young adult survivor.
Right.
That's part of the Generation Y, W-H-Y.
Yep.
And it was very poignant, very poignant. Yeah, you know, I remember back in the day, in 1996, 7, 8, when I was single and what that meant.
And now you have three Valentines by default.
Huh. Yes, I do. There's nothing I can do about it.
No.
Yeah.
No, you are required from this point forward when they start reading to not only buy, well, when Jess starts reading as well, I guess.
Right.
To buy Jess, Kobe, and Hannah Valentine's.
Cookie!
Yeah.
Cookie!
Mo.
They're starting to say, I want, instead of, can I please have?
Good.
So we're engendering self-correction.
Good luck to you. Godspeed.
It's not good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we finally got the dates. April 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I can count in order, is National Young Adult Cancer Awareness Week.
Awesome.
Yes. It's official. It is coming back. I don't know what year it is. It's like the 12th or 13th
mm-hmm.
year it exists, and it's going to be there, and it's all good stuff. And
Very cool.
I have amazing news tonight. I can't really find my drum roll anywhere. I used to have a drum roll here on the sound cue. Oh, here it is. Evan Handler, the actor, thespian, and long-term alumni of Young Adult Cancer, will be the closing keynote speaker at the OMG Cancer Summit for Young Adults April 25th, 6th, 7th, 8th on the Sunday afternoon, 28th of April. We are very excited to have him be there. We'll be promoting it up the wazoo for the rest of the week, and in perpetuity, hopefully he'll be able to come on the show between now and April to promote his coming to Las Vegas.
I'm super pumped.
Fabulous.
Evan Handler, you may know, was in Sex and the City.
Indeed. He was Charlotte's second husband, divorce attorney, and then she fell in love and married him.
Right. And then he is now starring against David Duchovny on the Showtime series Californication, which was just renewed for yet another season.
I don't have Showtime, but I've heard it's awesome. I will have to get on Netflix.
It's an eclectic show.
That's what I've heard.
It's a very eclectic, but I like it. It's very well acted. The characters are, it's great. It's really great.
Yeah, it's a very, everyone I know who watches it loves it. So I've heard great things. I will get on the Netflix and get caught up.
It's, we're thrilled. He's been on the show three times since we launched in 2007. And he has not come to an OMG Summit yet. He will be our closing keynote, and we are absolutely thrilled to have him on.
He'll be very good. Big draw for everybody, especially the ladies.
The ladies, it'll be a big draw.
Who are big Sex and City fans.
Speaking of the ladies, Kenny, I just looked at our metrics, and we are skewing like 80% female on Facebook.
It's pretty funny.
80% female.
On what? Just the...
On our wall.
Considering how many times we write douchebag.
Right.
It's
We're a very male-heavy brand, and yet we skew 80% on...
It's a reverse psychology.
Is it?
They like the bad boy. Little do they know that the people behind the curtain could not be less bad boy-like.
We're good boys.
So is that why I haven't met a man yet through stupid cancer?
Yeah.
That explains it.
There
it's
are
all
very
women.
Few of them. It is
yeah.
all women. It's Kenny, me, Matt, and Scott Slater. That's about it.
Yes.
I know all of you.
There you go.
Yeah.
We're done.
And you're, you're still questionable.
I am, yeah.
Yes.
On what?
Well, nothing. On the
you want to say something? Say something.
No, I'm not saying anything.
Oh, dear. That deserves one of these. Kenny?
That was the day of your delivery. It's, oh, boy. So, yes, in other news, I'm craving a Whopper.
Oh, yeah, I heard that Burger King got hacked today.
Twitter got
Twitter.
Hacked by Anon.
Oh, it was Anon? They took...
Yeah, I think a lot of times people just blame Anon. It's kind of like when an act of terrorism happens and you just, like, blame the same group.
Okay, so I'm on Burger King's Twitter feed, and it's protected now.
Yeah, it was, like, different a half hour
Yeah,
ago.
And it has an egg for the photo, and I can't see any of its tweets.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it was bad. It was like, we were bought by McDonald's today because the Whopper sucks. I was like, whoa. I remember I was at work, and I tweeted that it appears Burger King's social media manager has a day off. Yikes. And that was 7 hours ago. But, yeah, it was interesting. There was some not-so-good comments on there, and definitely that we were bought by McDonald's, the Whopper sucks. They were responding, like retweeting all the messages about all the people saying ha 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 about how they were hacked, and it was weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was some like racial stuff there, and I was like, oh, this is not good.
Long live the internet.
Whoever worked at Burger King needs to get on that ASAP.
Yeah.
Change the password from
password.
Oh, someone did tweet Whopper 123 was a really bad password. That was my favorite tweet. Yeah.
Kesha would have made a better password choice.
Yeah,
Kesha,
seriously.
Right, with your dollar signs in the middle of your word there. Yes, fantastic.
I'm glad you picked up that reference, Matt.
I actually know Kesha.
Yeah.
Do you?
I don't know a single song she sings, but I know the name.
You saw her in the grocery store.
What? Yes.
Even though you don't know Mumford and Sons.
I know the amazing Mumford.
I know. Yeah, I still think it's funny you don't know Mumford and Sons.
What does Mumford and Sons sing that I might know?
That song Something.
Yeah,
Something song.
They
okay.
put out Abbey Road, Street, Court, Lane. I don't know if you've heard that one.
Just download the album Babel. I think. How did Adele say it? Babel.
I think it is Babel.
Yeah, I think the official way to say it is Babel. It's very, you know, hipster-ish. I don't know.
Oh, so right up my alley.
Matt's pretty hip.
With my Huey Lewis in the News.
You drink PBR and you listen to vinyl.
PBR? It's not.
Smoking American Spirits.
It's more mainstream than that, but...
So not hip right now.
Yeah, they're more mainstream than that, but I don't know. I think you'd like them. It's pretty... I don't know. I Will Wait is like their big song... I enjoy them.
We'll school you, Matt.
Okay.
On your next 6-hour flight, you will listen to the entire discography of Mumford and Sons.
Yeah, that'll come out
playing
1 hour.
The banjo.
Come up with a full head of hair.
Yes.
There you go.
All right. Well, Jeff's called in, so let's get to our first Survivor Spotlight here. Very excited.
Jeff Tomchak is a consumer insight strategist, entrepreneur, and writer, born in Wisconsin and now living in Manhattan. He is an acute lymphoblastic leukemia survivor. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello,
Jeff.
How are all of you?
Hello. We're thrilled to have you, my friend.
It's great to be on. How's everyone tonight?
We are doing well. Where are you calling in from?
Right in Manhattan, in the heart of good old Midtown East.
Okay, so we won't guilt you for not being here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I certainly could have made it, but it's a bit of a venture down. So, and it's freezing out tonight.
Well, that's okay. We would have shipped you a dog to wear.
Yeah. I wear so many coats when the weather's like this, I can barely bend my elbows.
You see what I put on Facebook? It was 16 last night in Brighton Beach. 16 degrees.
It was 1 degree out this morning when I was going to work.
1 degree?
Yeah, one. With the wind chill. With the wind chill.
Speaking of which, we had Super Cancer Alaska. I forgot to mention. Sorry, Jeff. We had our Super Cancer Alaska meetup, Kenny, this weekend, right?
Yes, I have to get the follow-up.
All right, we got the follow-up on that for next week. So anyway, Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Not a problem. Happy to be on.
Now, if I'm not correct, we met through Suleika?
I suppose she facilitated the introduction. Yeah, I was at the Young Cancer Summit that you did here in New York City. My God, when was that last?
That was
September,
in September,
August?
Yes.
Yeah. So, so I came to that, and that was actually my big foray into interacting with other young adult cancer patients. So... I got a chance to meet you, and I had met Suleika probably a month prior, so.
So we'd love to hear your story. ALL, by the way, is a non sequitur. The very first time that I heard that someone had ALL, and I read it as all, I was like, you have all cancers?
That would be devastating. I hope I don't have all cancers, but the one I had was probably... I would say if you're going to get it, it's one that you can handle in a way that I think the outcomes typically are better than most. So I've had a fun run with it, but I'm past it, and it's hopefully never coming back. So.
Well, all right, so tell us about your life before cancer. You were uppity Adam. You were doing your thing, living your life. What was that like?
Oh, I had the... audacity to move from the Midwest to New York City because no one has ever done that before.
right.
About almost five years ago now. And a few years in, decided to stop pursuing the regular career path and ended up starting my own business at the end of 2010, going into 2011. So I was fresh into doing some consulting work of my own and focusing on being an entrepreneur. And then sort of had the usual, you know, body breaking down, not feeling quite like myself. I was at the time 27, so I was in, you know, pretty good health, worked out quite a bit athlete all my life and ignored it and ignored it and ignored it. And eventually what triggered me to finally go into the hospital was that aching pain in my side, which happened to be my liver shutting down. So it was processing so many cancer cells. And so I went in thinking, yeah, literally the day I went in, I was I had an intern at the time. I took a lunch meeting. I went and met my intern to scout a venue for a potential event that we were going to run for a client of mine. And, you know, casually on a beautiful Friday afternoon in June, thought I would walk into the emergency room at Bellevue Hospital here in New York City and, you know, get a prescription for something stupid and walk out completely fine. And obviously that didn't happen because the nurse looked at me and said, "You look like complete shit." And,
yep.
You know, from there, I was I didn't leave that hospital for something like 38 nights or whatever it was. So it was one of those, you know, hit by a train. Obviously, it came out of nowhere. No prior health issues. Had zero inclination that that's what it would be. But that was it. And then from there, I ended up transferring over to Memorial Sloan Kettering here in the city, where I've been cared for ever since. And I had a stem cell transplant in November of 2011. And that obviously did the trick because I've been in remission ever since.
That's great. When you were diagnosed, when you went to the hospital, a lot of young adults, what we hear repeatedly is that the last thing they think it's going to be is cancer. When you checked in the hospital, what they kind of tell you that, and you know, you said that they said you looked like shit, which is never a good thing that you want to hear. But did that was that one of the first things they thought it could be that
they did not at all, actually. Initially, I was misled several times. It was obviously severe anemia based on my hemoglobin levels, mm-hmm. which were astronomically low. They were shocked that I hadn't had a heart attack or a stroke by the time I walked in because my hemoglobin was so low. But they, you know, said it could be anything from, you know, as simple as mono and then all the way up to the extreme condition being leukemia. But it was never suspected that that's actually what it was. And as they ran every test, you know, they got closer and closer to the point where they had to do a bone marrow biopsy in order to determine what it was. And as soon as the doctor did the biopsy, I mean, he went in, and traditionally when you do a bone marrow tap, you'll probably know this, they would, you know, they would have fluid or, you know, some fluid in between the marrow and the edge of the bone. And he came in, and the cells were packed so tight with cancer cells that there was just literally no fluid. And he knew on the spot, without even having to send it to a lab, that that's what that I had leukemia. So that's pretty much when I found out. But it was never, yeah. I mean, my mentality going into it was certainly not that I had cancer. No one really suspected that. I had an eerie feeling though, and my parents live in Wisconsin, and I called them when I was in the emergency room that night and said, you know, I have a weird feeling about this. You might want to fly out here. And so they did, but I wasn't diagnosed for another 3 or 4 days from there.
So I want to talk about your stem cell transplant then. How did you find – those are your own stem cells, right?
My brother actually was
brother.
My donor. Yeah, so he was a 10 of 10 perfect match, which is a miracle in itself, obviously.
Was he the first person they looked at?
He was, yes. I have one sibling, and you know, they say for a match, it's out of every sibling that you have a 25% chance to match. So the more siblings you have, the better. And, you know, I have one brother, and we just were fortunate enough that he was a match.
That's amazing. That's
mm-hmm.
amazing. Did you find that when you transferred to Sloan, you were treated differently? Did they discuss, you know, or he's laughing already. All right, go on. You talk.
My experience between Bellevue and Sloan is night and day. I mean, it's the difference between a public hospital and a private. And, you know, the care I had at Bellevue, there were times where it was what it needed to be. But actually, before I even started treatment at Bellevue, I contacted a really extremely renowned doctor, Dr. Marty Tallman, who is one of the leading, you know, cancer oncologist when it comes to treating ALL specifically, and he actually designed the protocol for my treatment. And so I had reached out to him, and he basically told me to stay put because I was already at Bellevue and the risk of moving me wasn't worth bringing me over. And so they kept me there for my first round of treatment, but I knew all along I was transferring to Sloan Kettering. I wanted the best care I could possibly have, and at Bellevue there was just a series of, it was like the Confederacy of Dunces, a
wow.
series of pretty dramatic errors that happened, you know, infiltrating my tissue in my arm with chemotherapy to the point where I had a chemical burn. They underweighed me at one point, and they were supposed to be tracking my weight the entire time, and they weren't weighing me. Turns out that they had written down my weight as 60 pounds lighter than I actually weigh, and so they were underdosing my chemotherapy.
That's like chopping off your limbs. 60 pounds lighter?
60 pounds lighter. I mean, I weighed 170 pounds at the time, and I'm just under 6 feet tall, so I weighed 170 pounds at the time. And they wrote me down for roughly, I don't want to say it was 100 and just under 120 pounds is what they recorded my weight as.
And no nurse noted that, because 110 pounds on a grown man,
six feet
tall, is pretty tiny. I mean, I'm 5'6", and I weigh a lot more than 110 pounds, and I'm not big. So,
it's incredible that nobody caught the error. I mean, it was to the point where we had, you know, a very long discussion with the director of the hospital about what they were going to do and what we were going to do. It came to a head where, you know, my family certainly could have pursued a lawsuit and didn't, because at that point, anyone, you know, it's just not the nature of my family to begin with. But, you know, at that point I was transferring out of Bellevue, getting into the right care, and I was, you know, luckily I entered remission and it wasn't an issue. You know, hadn't I entered remission, maybe it would have been something bigger and people would have been more outraged, but we were just all happy that obviously my health was recovering, so it wasn't worth that battle. But it was a scary experience to not only be going through obviously the medical side of it, but then to deal with the rest of it.
Right.
You know?
And then you took to the internet. I remember you wrote a piece for Huffington Post that really caught my eye, and a bunch of people like sent it to my desk and said, "You got to read this." Like, I know that guy. So that's when I reached out, and you wrote a piece that was called Things I Wish I Knew, and it resonated so well, got such a huge response. But in retrospect, are you glad you wrote it?
I'm extremely glad I wrote it. You know, selfishly, I wrote it as a therapeutic outlet to finally, I've been a writer my whole life. I've always, you know, secondary career, it's always been pursuing writing, and you know, it's one of those things where throughout my cancer experience, I just did not feel like writing. And it took me such a long time to want to articulate anything having to do with what I had been through. And then one random day during that period of quarantine when your immune system is, you know, non-existent and you're stuck in your apartment and you have nothing to do besides stare at the same wall you've been staring at for the last 3 months, I had this urge to just get it all off my chest and let it go. And so it ended up being verbal vomit on a piece of paper that turned into a blog post that I, you know. So it actually ended up going through Suleika, her boyfriend Seamus, that I'm sure you've met, is editor at the Huffington Post.
Yep.
And he had gotten wind of it and contacted me and said, you know, would you like to share this with more people? And I said, you know what, I didn't write it for more people. It wasn't the intention, but sure, why not? And the response was just incredible. It was not expected. It's been really overwhelming, even still to this day, for people to be contacting me from all over the world, you know, saying thank you and asking if they can publish it in different languages. And it's just not something that you expect to happen because it was such a personal piece for me. But I think because I wrote it so personally, that's probably why it did resonate.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the other issues you had that definitely resonates with the young adults is you did not have health insurance when you were diagnosed.
I didn't.
I know a lot of people this has happened to, so
yeah.
When you're going for all these tests. I can't even imagine what you were thinking. I have insurance, and every time I had something done, all I kept hearing was, like, ka-ching, ka-ching in my mm-hmm. ear of, like, all the bills, and then the bills started coming in, and I wanted to throw up, not just from the chemotherapy. So tell me a little bit about your experience as a young adult not having insurance and then having to deal with that stress just on top of
being
sick.
Yeah, another fun part of the picture for sure. The insurance thing was, as I had stated earlier, I had started a business just a few months prior, and so I was in that mindset of here I am healthy, you know, no reason why I should be paying the outrageous rates of you know, New York medical insurance, particularly for insurance that at a high price point would potentially not even cover me for something dramatic anyway. So I had that mentality of, you know, until my business gets going, I'm making the right kind of money. I'll pay out of pocket for whatever I need. And, you know, the logic works up until something smacks you in the face, and which, in my case, it did. And it turns out, in the long run, it was probably the best thing that could have happened to me, because I think I would have exhausted any plan that I would have had. And I ended up qualifying for a unique form of Medicaid called Working Persons with Disabilities Insurance, which means that you actively are working and self-employed throughout your treatment. And so all I had to prove was that I had, you know, some revenue coming in throughout the entire time that I was being treated. And that happens to be one of the only forms of Medicaid that Memorial Sloan Kettering accepts. And so they ended up taking me in as a patient on the grounds of the fact that I qualified for that insurance. So it still covers me to this day through the, I believe, November, because it's like 2 years post-transplant that they'll cover you. And then I'll transfer on to my own plan. But it really was a strange kind of blessing in disguise the way it all worked out. But when I, obviously for the first month when I was navigating all those insurance issues, it was complete hell and scary, and another part of the extra added weight of having a disease. So there was a gentleman that was assigned to me at Bellevue. His name's Brian Cohen, and he works for the New York Legal Attorneys Group, which is a nonprofit organization that provides attorneys for patients as patient advocates. And he's the one that helped introduce that insurance to me and helped me get, you know, end up actually obtaining it, and to this day is a good friend of mine just on account of the fact that he's solved so many mysteries for me when it comes to insurance specifically.
Well, we have about a minute left. I just wanted you to talk about the C2B scene we were promoting in the lead-ups. Looks very interesting how you're channeling yourself, and it sounds like you were able to get some of your clients through your own skills in fundraising and development.
Yeah, my business, which I kind of do on the side now, I actually just took a full-time position with a company based in England, but I'm still doing my business on the side as well. So the whole business model is really helping entrepreneurs brand themselves and prepare for entry to marketplace when they're first getting off the ground. And so I had used a website online to raise some funds for a friend who had cancer before I was diagnosed, and ended up using my marketing skill set and knowledge of social media to raise a considerable amount of money for him through this website, which is called raiseitnow.com. And long story short of it, they were so impressed by how effective the campaign was, because it was their most successful one ever on the site, that they ended up contacting me and asking me if I would help them, you know, market themselves and better position themselves. So it was, it was just one of those strange coincidences where my skill set happened to tie into what I was doing to help a friend. So.
Well, that's really awesome. You are indeed a success story. You're coming up on your 2-year cancerversary this fall, right?
Absolutely, yep. Exactly.
Well,
right.
Every day brighter and bigger. Good stuff.
Yep, indeed.
Thank you. All right, we're going to make you come to the office even for no reason now.
Not a problem. I'll do my best to show face next time.
All right.
Try to do it in a month that isn't this cold.
Okay, I'll do our best. Jeff Tomczyk, thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Pleasure, thanks.
All right, let's hit the news.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
All righty. What's up, Kenny?
All right, head on over to events.stupidcancer.org, your one-stop shop calendar for all of our social and educational events nationwide. Something could be happening in your neck of the woods, and we certainly don't want you missing out. It's kind of light right now, Matt. We got a Northside Hospital, which is right outside Atlanta, an oncology and intimacy workshop happening Wednesday from 12 to 1. We, as always, have the We Spark Young Adult Group in L.A. happening on Thursday night, and I will be attending C4YW in Seattle this weekend.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Okay. It's here. Time to register for the 6th annual OMG Cancer Summit for Young Adults, April 25, 6, 7, 8 at the Palms Casino in Las Vegas. That's April 25th through 28th. 4 days of awesome at one of the largest gatherings of its kind in the world. Visit omg2013.org and learn more about the Players Club, which is an exciting way to earn travel reimbursement through fundraising. Once more, that's omg2013.org.
Matthew, I don't know if you've been in the Stupid Cancer Store lately. It's stupidcancerstore.org, but we have a lot of awesome Stupid Cancer merchandise. Wear Stupid Cancer, be proud, look awesome.
And do not forget about the Stupid Cancer Forums, which have almost 5,000 members now. This is a premier online community to connect with survivors, patients, parents, and caregivers just like you. Visit stupidcancerforums.org and sign up with one click through Facebook. And
truly epic.
Truly bracket, epic, bracket.
Epic, cap lock, epic. And that.
All right, your Stupid Cancer News. All right, I'm stoked for this show.
Me too.
All right. We are going to be joined tonight by two extraordinary ladies making their, I think it's their three-peat, or quad-peat, if that's a word I can make
up.
We
can't get rid of them.
Maybe we can get rid of Stacey, but we can't get rid of Elise. Okay. Stacey Lewis is the Chief Programming Officer and Deputy Chief Executive at the Young Survivor Coalition. For 7 years, she's been doing her best to meet the needs of young women with breast cancer, and Elise Spatz Kaplan joined Living Beyond Breast Cancer in 2000. In her current role as Director of Programs and Partnerships, she oversees their educational and support services. Please welcome back to the Stupid Cancer Show, Elise Kaplan and Stacey Lewis. Ladies.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Matt. You never get rid of me, but I know you love me dearly.
Oh, I have profound respect for because you once told me off, so...
And that sounds just like Stacey. Thank you, Matthew. It's good to be with you, and I have no problem cutting Stacey off because we do it all the time.
Good. Fantastic. Well, we're excited we're back. It's C4W time again coming up this weekend. Big gulp in the throat, as we all know what it's like to prepare for a giant epic conference.
That's for sure.
So for our listeners out there, let's just go over the history of what the conference is, and we could discuss how your two amazing groups came together 14 years ago, I believe. 13 years ago. Sorry, I won't press my luck. To bring this to the community. Let's start with Elise.
Okay. Thanks again, Matthew. On a serious note, it's always a delight for Living Beyond Breast Cancer to be invited to the Stupid Cancer Show. It's always fun to work with you. We never know what to expect. But to answer your question, C4YW is the annual conference for young women affected by breast cancer, hosted, as you mentioned, by Living Beyond Breast Cancer and Young Survival Coalition. And this will be our 13th annual program, and we're very excited to present a conference exclusively designed to meet the very unique needs of younger women diagnosed with breast cancer and their families, supporters, and their loved ones. As you mentioned, the 13th annual conference will be held this coming weekend, February 22nd to 24th, at the Hyatt Regency Bellevue, right outside of Seattle on the east side.
And, Stacey, you guys play a part in this too, clearly.
Yeah, just a wee bit. It certainly has been a wonderful and longstanding partnership that Young Survival Coalition has had with Living Beyond Breast Cancer. And I think as, you know, two organizations really working hard all year long to bring this meeting to the young women we serve, we're really excited that we're going to be heading west. Young women heading west. And so we know that the program, at least we've worked hard on it, and really do believe that we'll be meeting some unique needs, as well as providing plenty of time for networking for young women, many whom have never met another young woman diagnosed with breast cancer, to actually meet some of their peers and begin to share their lives in different ways. So we're really looking forward to a great program. Are we going to see you there, Matt?
I will not be there, but you will enjoy all the benefits of having 6-foot-tall Ginger Kenny there.
Break of heartbreak, but we do love Kenny, too.
I'm looking forward to making the pilgrimage to Starbucks.
There you go. There you
Kenny's
go.
Kenny's going to be throwing salmon in the market at other people. So what inspired Seattle?
Well, it's Stacy, and, you know, we as organizations, you know, we have constituents across the country and internationally. And for many of those who have attended our conferences over the years, in particular those on the West Coast, have often had to travel east and sometime a little southwest. But, you know, often saying, you know, there are many more young women on the West Coast that are just not able to attend the meeting. It's a great place to be, and we should give it a try. And although we've worked on it a number of years, it is the first year that we've actually been able to get as far west as we are. I think the second furthest has been Denver. Sound about right, Elise?
I think you're right, Stacy, and I think it has definitely been an interest in every single year. We have always explored during our site selection process points further west. But as you might know, Matt, from your own conference, the costs on the West Coast tend to be higher, and Living Beyond Breast Cancer and Young Survival Coalition do work hard year-round to raise the needed funds to host a conference of this size and caliber, and also to be able to offer travel grants and registration fee waivers to a pretty significant percentage of recipients. And I do want to acknowledge that Susan G. Komen for The Cure has provided generous support for our travel grants and fee waivers, which enable us to build the conference participant.
And that's always been a fascinating part of the conference to me, the dichotomy of needing such an important, you know, annual event to bring together so many hundreds of people, but the irony being that they can't afford to go, and that you kind of have to build this sort of financial reimbursement infrastructure to even make it successful, which just adds that much more complexity to the machine, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And Stacy, feel free to jump in. I mean, Stacy and I could both reference some of the stories that we read, because it is an application process, and people need to share with us their financial challenges and their need. And there are many very young women who have their college career interrupted by cancer, where just paying their day-to-day bills, let alone health insurance, is a concern. Those in the midst of their career, of those who may have been laid off over the past 5 years when the economy turned downward, the stories that we hear are so compelling and disturbing all at the same time. So it's really incumbent on us to remove as many barriers as possible, and cost is one of them.
This is Annie, and I am a young adult breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed just about a year ago to the day. We're triple negative. I wish I could attend this year, but because of my day job, I unfortunately will not be able to attend. But hopefully, you know, I'll get connected with you guys again soon. So I had a couple of questions. What kind of programming do you guys offer for, you know, young breast cancer survivors that they could look forward to at the conference?
Lots of vibrators.
Yes, you can find them in the exhibit hall most of the time.
Absolutely. I mean, and sex and intimacy is important to everyone. And, you know, the impacts of treatment are something that is relevant to the young women that attend our program. So we do offer workshops on sex and intimacy, as well as workshops that are going to be more disease specific. So more, you know, there are going to be workshops on triple negative, sometime on ductal carcinoma in situ. I mean, you know, we really are looking to hit the gamut. There are a number of workshops for young women with metastatic breast cancer, as well as this year we have extended our men's track. So there will be a
couple of workshops for men
and one for couples.
I like,
so this will be the first time we're offering one for couples, which will be nice to see how that's taken advantage of to help with communication skills and the challenges that cancer faces. And Annie, I do want to do a shout out to you because I also was a young adult breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed with breast cancer myself nearly 22 years ago.
Wow.
So I do recall sort of where you are in your own experience being 1 year out and how that may feel. So C4YW is just for you, and hopefully in 2014 you'll be able to make it to our program.
But it raises another issue that we face with our conference, too, is that young adults, they're upwardly mobile, they're trying to live their lives. They may see so much value in attending this, but they just can't find the time as well.
Yeah.
Plus the whole parenting and childhood thing. We get all these, love to be there, but I can't afford or find a babysitter. You know, it just speaks to the ironic dichotomy of the need for this conference, but the challenge to make it successful.
It is a challenge, Matt, and I think that, you know, the two organizations over the years have acknowledged that challenge, recognized that challenge. And one of the things we try to do, as you're so on the cutting edge of technology, is at least ensure that some of the more relevant content is positioned online as audio files, so that even if you're unable to attend and get the full atmosphere, that you can gain some of the education that we've offered at the event.
Right, and just the topics every year are so, well, topical, but they're so relevant. You're doing a lesbian workshop this year, clinical trials. You're doing nutrition workshops, and you're doing in the workforce. By the way, all your speakers are like have been guests on the show. We live in such a small, incubated little universe. It's amazing. And, you know, you're doing a session, you know, like I said, breast cancer-specific sessions on, like, fertility and pregnancy, metastatic breast cancer, body image and intimacy. But you're also tapping into lifestyle issues, too. You know, how do you make sense of your madness? Like, you have a session, I want you to talk about the creating your legacy session sparked my interest so much.
Well, I'm happy to comment on that one specifically, Matt, because it's something that's really near and dear to my own heart, and I'm sure Stacy and everybody else's. But when we started to track the sessions over the years, we make sure that there are sessions relevant to women who are newly diagnosed with breast cancer, those nearing the end of treatment, long-term survivors, and as Stacy said earlier, specific populations, metastatic, triple-negative, inflammatory, et cetera. And as such, when we started to expand our track for women with metastatic breast cancer, we always have sessions that are medical updates and psychosocial or quality of life updates. And over the years on evaluations, which we do evaluate all of our programs, and it's really the comments that we receive that helps us build the agenda for the following year. And in the past, you know, talking about the hard stuff, creating your legacy, what about women who are thinking about end of life? We wanted an empowering type of workshop that gives them the tools or the skills or the language to be talking about these things while they're still here. And it's very important to your point before. A lot of women have young families or family members with which they want to have meaningful conversations. So these sessions on creating your legacy are really, having moderated them in the past, are really something that leaves our participants with something very useful they can take home.
And what are some of the really, what are some of the most in-demand popular programs you guys have at the conference? One of the things I saw that sounded interesting was Zumba. I would probably fall and knock someone over after I tripped on my own feet. But what's some of the programming for, you know, especially for young women, which you guys find high in demand?
I would say the sex and intimacy reconstruction is always in demand, as well as opportunity to really ask some deep questions about the various procedures that are available. I think those in the psychosocial realm dealing with fear of recurrence, there are some workshops that we end up repeating twice throughout the weekend because they are in such high demand, and those are just a few of them.
Do you find that do you have more men signing up this year? I noticed that you do have quite a few workshops for men. Do you find you have a lot of men signing up this year?
I don't think, Elise, I don't know if you noticed more men. I didn't notice more men. We usually have a...
I didn't notice more men. I think it's safe to say that year after year, we do see a fair amount of couples coming because in all of our messaging, we're very inclusive and we're encouraging women to bring their supporters, their loved ones, their partners, et cetera. So it's very welcoming to men, whether it's a male partner, whether it's a brother, you know, it's different relationships because of the age of the women who are actually attending the program.
What would you guys say the biggest takeaway people get when you measure outcomes? We're struggling for that now. Like, what did you learn? And it's always that balance between you want it to be social and fun where they meet each other, and it's kind of like this homecoming because we all know each other on Facebook, and now we're in a place in the real world with pulses and want to make sure that you can actually know that what you're doing makes that much of a difference when they leave and go home.
Mm-hmm.
I would just add, and I'd love Stacy to comment too, what pops to the top of my mind is when we do read the evaluation forms, there is a recurrent theme of women thanking us for having such a tailored, relevant program and that they have now developed a whole list of questions to take back to their healthcare team to help them make important decisions moving forward, whether it's with treatment, whether they're in recovery, or whether they're many years later and are dealing with issues affecting bone health, menopause, et cetera. Women definitely tell us they're equipped now with a greater depth of information that is more specific to their phase of life and their age of diagnosis.
I would add that I think for some, you know, it really is that opportunity. To your point, Matt, you know, we're all connected to social media and many different forms and platforms, but that opportunity to actually meet someone face-to-face for many is priceless, and that is often articulated in the evaluations as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And on that, we do offer some meet-up opportunities, and we have identified areas where people with either specific diagnoses or different geographic regions of the country so that we can help facilitate the networking that's meaningful for each participant. So you're dispelling that isolation and aloneness that young women often tell us that they feel, where they know that they're in a sisterhood of a much larger group of women and they aren't so alone.
Yeah, I noticed on the schedule there was, I think it was hula or, oh no, belly dancing, another activity.
That's
where
new this year.
Yeah, that definitely sounds interesting, another opportunity where I would have to probably embarrass myself. And Matthew will get to see my awful dance moves in Vegas this year. But what about, do you guys talk a lot, you know, I know some of the interesting topics for people is like clinical trials, and what do you tell people? Because I'm sure some people there, you know, whether they are in treatment or just out of treatment or have metastatic disease, you know, what kind of, do you guys give medical advice and then just advise them to go back to their doctors? How do you approach that? Because I know that it's such a sensitive issue that you do have to, you know, kind of toe the line of what kind of medical advice you do give people.
I think
Go ahead, Stace.
I was just going to say, for the most part, when you're talking specifically about clinical trials, it really is a workshop where we're trying to impart understanding so that the attendees really begin to understand what is a clinical trial, what are the phases of a clinical trial, how do clinical trials work, how are they funded, to really, you know, and what questions do you want to begin to ask to identify if a clinical trial is right for you. So with that workshop in particular, the aim is not to point women in a specific direction, but to really equip them with the information and knowledge that they need to make that next decision.
And what about, you know, meals and, you know, I noticed one about nutrition. Do you guys do special meals for people where you're giving lectures and workshops and, you know, things like that? Do you tailor your meals to the lifestyle they're supposed to live post-treatment and even in treatment?
We
try
very hard, but... it's very costly to have the most nutritious meal possible, but We're very cognizant of trying to offer healthier meal choices throughout the conference weekend.
And
would you agree, Stace?
Absolutely. We work really hard to provide a variety so that, you know, you're not eating oatmeal for three meals a day, but as well as to ensure that it is going to be healthy.
It's funny.
And even some gluten-free meals available this year or gluten-free snacks. So we definitely and are offering more vegetarian-type choices.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we went to, this is not a slight against them, but I attended the 2008 Livestrong Summit. No, sorry, 2010 Livestrong Summit. And they served, like, the most deep-fried, like, unhealthy, like delicious, amazing
Austin
food. I know. You can't like try to. You can't try to be healthy in Austin, but it was just like I remember. I didn't care personally, but there was so much negative feedback. Like, how dare a cancer conference serve such unhealthy food? And you know, now that I'm wizened and bald and seasoned from hosting conferences, I know that the healthier the food, it's like 20 times more expensive too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and you try to do your best. You really just try. But I do want to go back to one thing that Annie mentioned before, which is that like when we give medical advice or when you put patients in an opportunity to get other opinions that are clinical in nature, then they go back to their doctor and the doctor's like, "Who the hell told you that?" You know, do you have a relationship with hospitals in a way that they're familiar with this conference and that it's almost like a trusted source?
Well, I think, I'd love Stacey to add to this, but both Living Beyond Breast Cancer and Young Survivor Coalition have pretty extensive medical advisory boards. And we have physicians and psychosocial experts from different healthcare systems across the country. And as such, there is a lot of familiarity with one or both organizations. And I think those hospital systems, trust us. But that said, we don't have at LBBC anyway any deep rooted relationship with a particular hospital system because that wouldn't go over well either. So I think the more our brand is out there and the more women are coming, as you've looked at the faculty that are serving on this year's conference, they are some of the most highly respected nationally and even internationally renowned experts. And I think that really helps to underscore the credibility of this program. And all we can do is arm women with information to take back to their team for them to discuss and make some, informed decisions with their doctor that knows their personal circumstances. We're very, very clear at the conference that, the speakers cannot answer specific individual questions. But it can help women to formulate the questions to take back to their care team.
That's a good point. And this is Kenny. How do I, as an exhibitor, better serve the attendees of the conference? What do you hope that the attendees will get out of their interactions with the exhibitor organizations and individuals that show up?
So, Kenny, it really depends on the type of organization, and I think that one of the reasons, or at least we would hope, that one of the reasons that you guys continue to come back is because you do gain both more relationships, great networking, great PR, so to speak, public face for your organization, and a great opportunity to interact with people that you're also looking to serve. So whether selling T-shirts or offering meetups or, really providing some detailed medical information, the reality is that we want to ensure that those that attend the conference, have an opportunity to interact with organizations, entities, people that they may not have had that opportunity to do so before. So for some coming to this year's conference, this will be their first time hearing about stupid cancer.
Well, you'll have to just come by booth number 200 and say hello.
No doubt people will be flocking to your exhibit.
It's time to look for the young redheaded man over 6 feet tall. So one of my questions I was wondering is what stage do you find most women who sign up? Are they still in treatment? Are they post-treatment? Are they 5 years out? What's the most popular kind of breast cancer demographic who comes to the conference?
Is that a trick question? Because
no, I think so.
The answer to that is, and it's interesting you ask that, Annie, because in the opening remarks, we typically ask the participants to identify, if they're comfortable, to raise their hand. And we sort of do a roll call, so to speak, and ask women to raise their hand if they were diagnosed less than a year ago or, you know, 1 to 3 years ago, you know, et cetera, and on and on. And clearly, women diagnosed, you know, less than 2 years ago are a very large part of our audience. But right on up to midterm, long-term survivors, they come back to our program. So my experience over the 13 years, because I've been there since the first year, is that we do see women across the lifespan and across their own survivorship experience feeling that the program is relevant or meets some of their needs. That said, the newly diagnosed woman definitely represents a larger percentage of attendees, which is, you know, when she's hungry for information and has probably a few more questions.
Elise, I know that you were diagnosed 3,000 years ago with me in the Stone Age, but but in theory, you're an alumni of the young adult cancer world, and I was hoping you could opine, if I can use an SAT word, on the extraordinary difference in culture, community, connectivity that exists for people like us than did, you know, in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, you saved that for the last minute of the show?
Yeah, you have 30 seconds. Go.
Okay. You know, it's a great question, Matt, on a serious note. Truly, 1991, it was a different era. There's been a huge paradigm shift, and I think in my 30 seconds, what's most striking to me...
I'm kidding, you have 5 minutes.
What's striking to me, off the top of my head, is that in 1991, I finished treatment and was told, go have a nice quality of life, you're done. But no one could tell me what quality of life meant. It was a phrase. I didn't get it. I had a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, and an 8-year-old. What was I supposed to do? Today, moving forward, we can define quality of life. We know what it is, and we know that it means different things for every individual who's been touched with, you know, a diagnosis of cancer. And so there's much more of a conversation and dialogue between doctor and patient today as it relates to making treatment decisions or how to manage side effects, how to prevent side effects, than in the Stone Ages when you and I were diagnosed. And basically, at least if you were young and had breast cancer, there were 2 chemotherapy cocktails. If you were node negative, you got CMF. If you were node positive, you got AC. And that's typically how it went. Of course, hormone receptor positive were offered hormonal therapy, but today, it's different. There are more options. There's more of a dialogue, and quality of life does take center stage for many people. And you're looking at career, lifestyle, life events, and making treatment decisions and other choices based on that. It's very collaborative today.
When I was looking at your story, sorry, I mean to cut you off. When I was looking at your story, I saw what year you were diagnosed, and I did ACT. I actually didn't do Taxol because I was anaphylactic allergic. I won the award for having the worst allergic reaction in 4.5 years at my oncologist, so I did Abraxane. But I feel for you that you had to do AC. Did you do AC?
I did AC,
without
and I have to say, Zofran had just been FDA approved,
okay.
So it was the first anti-nausea medicine that started to change the landscape on how chemotherapy was experienced by all people. And it wasn't even in tablet form. It was just an intravenous, you know, formulation that I got the day of treatment. So
that was all you had?
That was it. And
I feel for you.
And we moved forward. So the good news is here it is nearly 22 years later, and we've made some great strides in terms of quality of life specifically. There are more treatments available. There is more attention to preventing or alleviating side effects. But we do have far further to go, as we all know.
Right, and I was telling Matthew before the show, it's pretty amazing that triple-negative breast cancer only had a name, I think, less than 10 years ago.
That's right. And I am probably a triple-negative diagnosis, but I'll never know that because HER2 had not been identified in 1991,
right.
So it couldn't be tested. But I was ER and PR negative and
yeah.
young.
That's one of the things my doctor always reminds me of whenever I freak out about having been diagnosed with triple negative. She's like, people had triple negative for like 50 years and they're all totally fine now. It's just we didn't even know what it is. It was, and they had significantly less treatment. So congratulations on being
healthy alumni.
An alumni. I like that.
Survived.
Not just of the universities where
yes.
I attended.
Well, people always say, Matt, you're going to be 40 next year. What are you going to do? And I was like, well, I'm going to graft myself as an alumni. So there's my loophole.
There you go.
So let's take the next 2 minutes. We'll close out the show. Stacy, you've been with YSC for 7 years. I realized that I was volunteering for YSC back in 2002. So I've been there indirectly volunteering for God knows how long, 10 years and so. There's been so much change in the young adult breast cancer world, and YSC and LVBC have been at the forefront of it. But I would love you to just comment on the progress that you've seen infrastructurally in the services that you guys do for the young adults. Your forums, for example, just relaunched into huge acclaim.
Thanks, Matt. You're right. It is a huge acclaim. We're really excited about the newly launched community boards. As you know, serving the same population, that it is really a way that young women connected. And earlier in the organization, when the bulletin boards first launched, that was really all that young women had. And so going through a couple of platform transitions, here we are in 2013, really excited to be able to offer an even better platform and one that seems to be going extremely well. Many of our returning constituents as well as newly diagnosed women are really enjoying the opportunity to talk to other young women regardless of the time of day or night, wherever they are, really about some very specific issues to them. I think one of the other things that has changed over the years is that, you know, as an organization, to your point, Matt, and it was interesting, a point that you shared with me and kind of raised my awareness to the fact that, you know, when Young Survival Coalition started, we were the first young adult oncology-focused organization. And I think what we've seen since then is we've been able to grow as an organization, not only externally, but really internally, and really begin to then develop more targeted resources for our constituents. So, you know, starting with a great program like the bulletin boards, which served many, you know, to now be able to offer newly diagnosed resource kits and post-treatment resources and metastatic resources to really begin to deep dive, you know, on the needs that our constituents have and develop programs and resources that are most appropriate. And I think that that is one of the most significant, impactful changes that we've been able to make, and really one of the reasons why I've just been so honored to work for the organization over these years.
And now you are a deputy chief executive, so you must be doing something right. Jen's a wonderful person.
I agree with you. She is indeed a wonderful person and a great leader. The organization, from board through staff and many volunteers, have been really glad that she's come on board. She's really doing a great job.
Well, I've enjoyed working with you guys. We've enjoyed working with C4W for many, many years now, and here's to the future. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Break a leg.
Break both legs. Break every limb you have. Have a wonderful time in Seattle. We hope it's a phenomenal success. Kenny will report back on his success based on how much alcohol he drinks.
All right.
Oh,
well, we
please.
can't thank you enough for having us both.
Right. Elise Kaplan, Stacy Lewis.
Thank you.
All right. The Young
thank
Survival
you.
Coalition Living Beyond Breast Cancer present the C4W Annual Conference for Young Women with Breast Cancer this weekend at the Hyatt Regency in, no, at the, I'm reading the 20, oh, you gave me the wrong thing, in Seattle. What's the hotel?
It just says
right.
Bellevue. The Bellevue Hotel in Seattle?
In Bellevue, Washington.
Okay. Well, there you go. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Okay,
take
bye-bye.
Care, everybody.
There No, the bio is on the C4W2012 template letterhead.
Uh-huh.
I read the wrong one. Yeah, Seattle. So, Kenny, you looking forward to heading out there?
I am looking forward to be back in Seattle, yes.
That's right. You were just there, weren't you?
No, I was in San Diego.
What do you mean back in Seattle then? When were you there?
I've been to Seattle in the past, and I'm looking forward to going to Starbucks again.
I do want you to throw some salmon at somebody.
I will.
In the fish market.
Is that the fish? Is that the big fish? Those are salmon?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like Alaskan something. Sockeye salmon. That's what it is. It's sockeye salmon. You literally, they throw.
I'll carry one on and see how it fares.
Buy a chair, buy a seat for it.
Exactly.
With the seatbelt and
yep.
everything.
Yeah. I have been. I was just young. I didn't throw anything.
Seattle's great. It's a great town.
Yeah, it is.
Well, the part that confuses me, it looks a little like it's almost like Gotham City-ish from the movies, from the Nolan movies. It has, you know, it's got the two stadiums right leading up to it, and the city's like up on this big hill.
Yes.
And there's lots of lakes and islands.
There's that needle thing.
That needle thing.
Space
yeah.
needle.
Okay.
And the highway that's like dominoes stacked on top of each other.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, I'm happy with tonight's show.
It was great.
We love C4W. Good stuff. Good
cool.
stuff.
I really wish I was able to go this year, but...
No, but it raises the point. Yeah. Like the challenges were trying to help young adults with
mm-hmm.
cancer, and they would be there in a heartbeat if they could, but it's not even as much that they're sick.
Right.
It's that they're busy because we're young
yeah.
adults.
Yeah, it's when
yeah.
you take off 5 months from work to
right.
not die
right.
from cancer.
Yeah.
You know, you just want to try and be at work as much as you can.
Right.
You also, when you're, you know, only being a year out, I also want to maybe try to take a
right.
vacay that has nothing to do with cancer.
Right.
Maybe get a tan because then that's just more cancer. But yeah,
this brought to you by Coppertone.
Yeah, so yeah, with my SPF 100. But yeah, I also you know want to make up for the past year where I couldn't travel and go see family and go see friends. So you know we'll see what happens in the future. But
yeah,
it sounds like a great event. I've heard of a lot of people who are attending, and I'm sure it's gonna be an amazing.
Emily Cousins is speaking, Kenny.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you're gonna see her speak. She's wonderful. She's their featured survivor. For the opening ceremony.
And she's a local. She lives out there.
Well, yeah,
very
that,
cool.
That saves on travel.
Yes.
Indeed.
All right. Well, that is our show. It's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
Okay, folks, that's our show, number 255. We hope you had as much fun as we did poking a stick at stupid cancer.
Special thanks to our in-studio guests, Matt Beckett, Lauren McCann on the couch, and our guests, Jeff, Tom Chuck, Stacey Lewis, and Elise Kaplan.
And joining us on next week's show, celebrity guest co-host Andrew Jenks. He is the creator, director, and executive producer of MTV's World of Jenks. He joins us as we tackle the realities of young adult cancer, how it sucks, and what you can do to make a difference. And we're thrilled to welcome guest Tomber Lane, professional coach, founder of Well Beyond Ordinary, and Nico Juber, author of 10 to Thrive, founder of Thrive Survive, plus the insanely inspirational survivors Chrissy Norwood and Sephora Razor in dueling Survivor Spotlight.
Okay, folks, if you missed any of our past shows, download them all for free on iTunes at itunes.stupidcancer.org. Remember, folks, if it ain't stupid, it ain't cancer. Live from the chemo deck on behalf of Kenny Kane, Andy Goodman, myself, and our whole team here at the Stupid Cancer Show, have a great week, and we'll see you back here next Monday live at 8 p.m. Good night.
Good night.
In this world, too many soldiers are serving multiple tours, so...